Welcome to Free Talk Live. You're invited to join us here on the radio waves. We've got them for you. You can get on the radio toll-free, 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. We also have Discord, the new way to call into the show that makes you sound way better than if you were on the phones. And it's super easy to get set up with Discord over at discord.lrn.fm. There is an app, and as my understanding, you do actually need the app in order to use the voice features. That's what I was told. I have not tried to test this claim myself because I've been using the app the whole time. But there is a web version of Discord if you just kind of want to get in and poke
That's
around
what I use.
And check it out. And I don't know if that web version will work on a laptop, like with a headset or something. I'm not sure. But if you've got the app, it'll definitely work, and it'll work great, and you'll sound great. Discord.lrn.fm. Joining you tonight, it's Ian.
Melanie.
And Mark.
I want to start out the show with a shocking headline. Now, I am not an attorney, but Melanie, you did go to law school.
Yes.
So you're the closest thing to an attorney here. You didn't actually get the bar, pass the bar.
I passed the bar. Don't have a license.
So when you pass the bar, you then have to apply for the license? Is that how it works?
So you also have to pass a basically a background check.
And you didn't think you could pass the background check?
Didn't tell me no. They told me we would like $30,000, please.
Was this the state government that told that to you down in Louisiana?
The Louisiana Supreme Court, yes.
So you'd have to pay off the Supreme Court itself, not like...
They have a front company, right? Like, it's not just like, send a check written out to the Supreme Court of the state of Louisiana.
So who hands out the licenses then?
The Supreme Court of Louisiana.
Who's the front company?
A rehab place in... I want to say Alexandria. That might be wrong.
Wait, so the rehab place has nothing to do with the Supreme Court then?
Yeah, they do.
I'm confused.
I can't tell you to give me a kickback, but my brother-in-law owns this business. Why don't you cater your party through him?
So wait, you had to pay $30,000 to the rehab?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Interesting. Anyway, I didn't know about that. But so you've spent a little bit of time, you know, learning about courts. I've spent some time in court before, and I was shocked when I saw this headline from CBS News published just a few days ago that the Democratic National Committee has served WikiLeaks with a lawsuit via Twitter.
Not sure you can do that.
You cannot do that.
That was what I thought. But let me tell you the story here. The Democratic National Committee Friday officially served its lawsuit to WikiLeaks via Twitter, employing a rare method to serve its suit to the elusive group that has thus far been unresponsive. As CBS News first reported last month, the DNC filed a motion with the federal court in Manhattan requesting permission to serve its complaint to WikiLeaks on Twitter, a platform the DNC argued the website uses regularly. The DNC filed a lawsuit in April against the Trump campaign, Russian government, and WikiLeaks, alleging a massive conspiracy to tilt the 2016 election in Donald Trump's favor. All of the DNC's attempts to serve the lawsuit via email faded, which I didn't know you could do that either, failed. The DNC said in last month's motion to the judge, which was ultimately approved.
Okay, yeah, you can do that. 12B6 on that cause of action, though, y'all. But yeah,
can do that. What was all that? 12B, huh?
That is not a claim.
You're going to translate here. I'm lost.
It's like if I sued you and said, Ian, you're wearing a green shirt today, so I'm suing you for $3 million. Like, well, that's not a claim, though. So
wait, so you're saying they're... case is bunk from the start?
Based on what that's described as, I'm suing you because I lost the presidential election? Yeah, no.
So you're saying this case is going to get thrown out of court?
The service is good. It should. Okay. The service is good if they got that exception. There are those. Yeah. You made it sound like they just tweeted a complaint to WikiLeaks.
But wait a minute. When you serve somebody, and again, I don't have a whole lot of experience with civil cases. I've been in criminal court countless times for civil disobedience and things like that. But when somebody is served with paperwork, usually you got to have the sheriff go down to wherever it is
that, pay them, yeah.
That person is. Yeah, you got to pay hire the sheriff. And
you can have any. We would recommend
by default you have to use the sheriff. You can ask the judge for permission to do it yourself.
You're talking about state court, though.
That's my understanding.
Depends on the state.
You're talking about state court. This is federal court. We recommended that you use a U.S. citizen who is 18 or older. It was unclear that those were actual requirements, easy enough to find. So
the feds don't have a, you know, general requirement that it needs to be law enforcement who serves a lawsuit?
No.
Okay.
It usually does have to be done.
Don't you normally have to touch the person?
Usually. You can go into... It's one of those really rare things that almost never gets approved, and you'd be crazy to even ask, but there are technically exceptions to that, and if they're claiming, just because it's WikiLeaks, they're probably going to get it, but if they're claiming we can't get a hold of these people, one can either, then they're probably just going to approve that. It's like an extraordinary remedy, but yeah, you can do that.
But with email, now, Mark, I know you have a system, and some people have this in, you know, business, where you can see if somebody opens an email most of the time, right? Where if they have their images turned on in the email, there's like a tiny little image that's included in the email. It's not even noticeable.
Like a little transparent image,
And as long as the person isn't blocking images, which, of course, a lot of emails do block images by default.
That's why they do it.
So like Gmail or Google or whatever. Well, no, it's also done for other reasons, but... You know, to keep bandwidth down. So if you're opening a bunch of emails on your smartphone, you don't want to see all the images if you're paying by the megabyte or gigabyte or whatever. So there's different reasons for it. But so you send emails out with these little test images in it, and then you'll see if somebody has opened or not the email. If nobody ever opens the email, can that person really be considered served? If the person doesn't read the tweet...
You don't usually do service through email.
Well, they tried that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you don't usually. They probably had a good approval for that.
They did, and then they felt like they didn't have success, so they're saying, "Well, we see WikiLeaks is on Twitter. They're posting on Twitter, so judge, can we serve them?"
It's probably easier to prove that they're on Twitter because they're continuing to post tweets. The rule for a service usually is that it doesn't matter whether or not you actually got it. It matters if it was served properly.
And as long as the judge says this is a proper service, then it's proper.
Yeah.
I see.
They might just be trying to cover all their bases because I can't necessarily, if you have read receipts turned off, I can't necessarily prove you got an email, even though it's usually not on me to prove that. But if I tag you in a tweet, I can prove that you were on Twitter after that.
So on the other hand of this means that it's easy to get a copy. of the suit because they served them in their tweet. It links to the PDF, right? So of their suit to WikiLeaks, Box 4080, University of Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. A lawsuit has been filed against you. And then it goes on for, I guess isn't that many pages. I guess there's multiple attachments. So
can
they've served WikiLeaks.
Can you serve a federal lawsuit outside of the United States to a foreign entity?
Is it a foreign entity?
It's WikiLeaks, Box 4080 in Victoria, Australia.
Okay, that doesn't mean it's a foreign entity. That means they have a foreign mailing address.
Well, what else could it mean? I mean, if they had any kind of U.S.-related contacts...
Okay, but
people,
I'm sure that, like, Chevron has mailing addresses in other countries.
They didn't even put Julian Assange's name on here. It's just to WikiLeaks.
Well, he's probably not a party to that lawsuit.
Well, I mean, who is a party to the lawsuit? So far, all it says here is WikiLeaks. I mean, WikiLeaks
is an entity, though. And if it's not...
But what does that mean? What does it mean to be an entity? I mean, they have a website.
You know what it means to be an entity in a legal
context. Well, normally in a legal context, it means having a corporation.
So if you are... There are things called unincorporated entities, and they're usually unincorporated partnerships. If you just fail to incorporate or form some other form of entity...
They'll just presume you are one.
I take it back.
Yeah.
I take it back. Plaintiff... Defense looks like Julian Assange's name is on here. So WikiLeaks, semicolon Julian Assange, semicolon Donald Trump Jr., Roger Stone, and then several other names.
Wait, they're
here.
Suing Donald Trump Jr.?
Yes, this is a suit against WikiLeaks, the Russian government, apparently, and the Donald Trump campaign. We'll tell you more about it coming up here in moments. It's Free Talk Live. We'll be right back. This is Free Talk Live, Andy. You can bring up whatever is on your mind. Our number here, 855-450-FREE. WikiLeaks being sued by the Democratic National Committee for being part of an alleged conspiracy with the Donald Trump campaign and the Russian government, apparently. We will tell you more about that because I've actually got the 66-page lawsuit pulled up here. But what brought it to my attention in the first place was the headline that the DNC was allowed by a judge to serve this lawsuit on WikiLeaks via Twitter, which to me just seemed shocking. But
wait, and if I don't know enough about WikiLeaks' internal organization, I don't know if they're evasive.
No, nobody knows what WikiLeaks' internal organization is. All we know about WikiLeaks is Julian Assange is the figurehead. There's no records as far as who else works for WikiLeaks that I'm aware of.
Which
and
makes
for good
sense.
Reason.
Yeah.
Right, for good reason. You're not supposed to know who's involved with WikiLeaks.
There was some kind of lawsuit by people who left WikiLeaks, so we know some people that did work for WikiLeaks.
Oh, really? Well, then they may know some of the people who
so
still work there.
It's then kind of pointless to sue them because there's probably no property owned in the name of WikiLeaks.
There's a website.
And if we don't know... Okay, so now you have the domain WikiLeaks.whatever.
They probably have a rented office somewhere under some other name that's not under the name WikiLeaks.
This isn't going to really do you any good, DNC. Like, what are you going to seize? Okay, so you could seize the website. They don't know anything else.
Right.
And they'll start the website somewhere else.
And if you run WikiLeaks, which is, again, an organization, for those who don't know, WikiLeaks has released all kinds of really interesting and damning information against not just the United States government, but against other world governments from around the planet. They do amazing work and really great kind of transparency work that they've been up to for many years now. I don't remember when they... were founded, but it seems like most of the last decade that they've been around.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, and so they've done the world a service, as far as I'm concerned. And if they don't ever respond to this, as you pointed out, what are they going to seize? What's the interest in WikiLeaks even taking the time to bother responding to this? If I were in their
views.
Position,
yeah, like that's maybe. Because
if I were in their position, I would ignore it.
Yeah.
You know?
There's no. Because if they can't identify any property that the alleged entity owns, and they can't identify the people who run or own the entity, you're essentially suing...
A nullity.
Yeah. Right? You're suing, like, a ghost or something. Like, I don't know. And then this claim is ridiculous. I'm suing you because I lost the presidency. Yeah, well, guess what?
Let's go to Matthew. He's in Louisiana. I've got more about the story and, you know, what is contained in this lawsuit. What are the allegations? What are they saying... This conspiracy was. Matthew in Louisiana, though, you're first up here.
That WikiLeaks received the leaked DNC emails and the leaked Podesta emails from Russia and published them.
That's not illegal.
But if you look at the timestamps on the emails and how long it took to download it. This was in an article in The Atlantic a couple of months ago. Apparently, whoever downloaded those emails was standing next to the server. So that means that the Russians have had to have physically walked into the DNC.
Okay.
Anybody look like Boris walking into the DNC?
So you feel that this is somehow evidence that precludes a Russian hack? Is that what you're saying?
That is what an article that was, I believe it was The Atlantic, about 3 to 4 months ago, published this. They were very disappointed to find out, damn it, the Russians didn't hack it because the download times would have taken longer than transmission via transatlantic cable.
For a bunch of emails?
Yes.
I mean, emails don't take up that much space.
Email
I mean, I haven't seen the story,
is
but
pretty instantaneous as long as you're not using encryption.
It does not, in fact, travel as fast as light. It travels through the fiber optic to a transatlantic cable, which is more likely than not copper, at which point the signal slows down. And then it is re-uploaded to either copper or fiber optics and then proceeds on its way. So the actual speed of email is somewhere in the neighborhood of, I don't know, half the speed of light.
Well, it sounds to me like, you know, if the Atlantic says it, then, you know, that they've done their reporting on it. I'm not going to sit here and guess one way or the other. But it's interesting that it wasn't ahead of time. Like, it was right then.
Yeah.
I mean, there's more lag re-uploading it to the WikiLeaks site than you could figure that out anyway. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, supposedly, this was a physical handoff by some ex-British diplomat who met somebody in Washington, D.C. and got a fire stick with the emails on them. And this diplomat, though, has now assumed room temperature, natural causes. All the DNC is doing is basically just trying to keep up the idea that Donald Trump is a Russian spy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, half the speed of light is still 150 million miles per second. So that's human lag is more than that still.
Yeah, but they were able to detect the download speed. You'd have to read the article. Rush Limbaugh covered it.
Well, there's a lot of opinions about this out here. I mean, according to just a brief search, why the latest theory about the DNC not being hacked is probably wrong, according to TheHill.com. I would say it's something that, you know, people are just going to have different opinions about. But regardless, the lawsuit is going forward. Any other comments, Matthew?
Yeah, I'd actually called in to bounce off of something that Daryl and Chris were talking about, how New York City has decided to crack down on the number of Ubers and Lyfts and some other service drivers.
I actually had that story in show prep.
It seems that the people who own the medallions, I understand why they're asking the government to come in on their behalf. They paid all this damn money for this thing, and their livelihoods depend on it. They've got mortgages and all these other wonderful things that they can't afford to make less money. But I remember down here in the oil industry in the late 70s and early 80s, we were blowing and going, drilling everywhere and anywhere for oil. We did not realize the reason why we were doing that was because there was a tax on imported oil called the Windfall Profits Tax. And basically, it was an arrangement to encourage people to drill more oil, irrespective of what the world market price was.
Well, more coming up here in moments. This is Free Talk Live.
Ron Paul, Judge Napolitano, Larkin Rose, the biggest names in the liberty movement, will be at the largest gathering of free thinkers, voluntarists, libertarians, and ANCAPs in Acapulco, Mexico, from February 14th to 19th, 2019 at Anarchapulco. You'll love the lineup of speakers discussing entrepreneurship, investments, and personal relationships for 4 days among the sun and beaches of a world-class resort. Go to Anarchapulco.com and use code FTL to register and receive 15% off. Anarchapulco.com, code FTL.
It's Free Talk Live. You can dial in toll-free, bring up whatever is on your mind here. We're talking about the Russians, WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, and apparently the Donald Trump campaign, Donald Trump's son, being sued by the Democratic National Committee, and they claim that it was a conspiracy to hack their servers, and we haven't even gotten into what the lawsuit is alleging. It's a 66-page long suit. And we've actually got it here, plus the story about the judge actually allowing the suit to be served to WikiLeaks over Twitter, which is basically unheard of as far as serving a lawsuit.
Extraordinary, I've been told.
Yeah, is concerned here. It's Ian, Melanie, and Mark in the studio tonight. Also, want to make sure that you're aware about Zencash. Zencash is an amazing cryptocurrency that has really taken off in just the last year since it came out back in 2017. Like a lot of cryptocurrencies, of course, you know, it's out there, it's competing in the marketplace. But what makes it special? Well, they've got some of the best technology, including zero-knowledge anonymity. So if you care about privacy, you really need to know about Zencash. And check out the details on their secure nodes and super nodes, which are ways for you to back up the system of Zencash and basically make it more, you know, strengthen it. The more nodes there are in the system, the better off the network is. In fact, I believe they may at this moment have the number one node count on the planet, because I know they were for a while they were kind of tied up with Ethereum, which was, I believe, the number one node count, and from what I understand they have surpassed Ethereum. So unless something else has surpassed it, that and I don't know where you can go to get a chart of all the top node counts out there, so I'm not sure on this statement, but it's if it's not number one, it's in the top three likely. Zencash, with over 17,000 nodes, that includes both their secure nodes and their brand new super nodes, which will advance the decentralization of the Zencash network and ensure the utility not only of Zencash as a currency, but also the future services that will be layered in the infrastructure. The supernodes will bring network, economic, and technical improvements across the network, and there are already, I believe, about 2,000 supernodes in the system.
Now, besides bringing those kinds of security to the system, they also get paid.
So that's correct.
Yeah, those supernodes get a certain amount back.
Because it costs money to run one of these nodes.
Yeah, it costs some money to run the nodes.
It definitely does.
But the return is significantly higher.
The official Zencash wallet is available right now for Linux, Mac, Windows, and Android devices. You can learn more at zencash.com. Once again, that is zencash.com. As we go back to Matthew here, who was trying to drive at some sort of point. I'm not really sure what you were getting at, Matthew. You were saying you wanted to comment about New York City cracking down on Uber and Lyft and freezing any new vehicle licenses for those who want to do ride sharing in the city, which, you know, I guess I shouldn't be surprised that they have a license, but now they're not even going to be allowing more to come out. You said they covered this on Thursday, and then you started talking about the oil business, which is the trade that you or the industry that you work in. So how are you going to tie those two together?
This was in the early 70s. Not early 70s, late 70s, early 80s. Down here in Southeast Louisiana, we were blowing and going. We were drilling everywhere and anything. We're just drilling like crazy.
Okay.
Because the price of oil was high enough to make it possible to drill offshore Louisiana and onshore Louisiana. In a big kind of way.
Okay.
What we didn't realize was that the reason the price was high was because of a Carter-era regulation called the Windfall Profits Tax that artificially propped up the price of oil. But every barrel that was imported in the United States had a Windfall Profits Tax placed on it. It was a tariff, and that's on imported oil,
okay,
and oil produced from old wells.
So the industry in the United States was being protected from outside competition by this tariff. All right. What's that have to do with Uber and Lyft in New York City?
Well, it was a government policy. And the problem when you're living, you're dependent on government policy for a living, the policy can change.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. In the case of the oil companies, it's, you know, it's going to hurt those oil companies. In the case of Uber and Lyft, it's going to hurt individuals who are going to be unable to get into the marketplace and provide service. Thank you, Matthew, for the call tonight. That is definitely true. I mean, if your success is dependent on political whims, then when that political carpet, you know, gets pulled out from underneath you by a new group of politicians who've come in and have decided that
or a technological change.
That can happen too, but you know, he was talking about relying on politicians to protect you. If the winds of change come in and different politicians get elected, then you're done for at that point.
Yeah, so in the case of the medallions, and that's what he was called in about.
He's actually referring to not the taxi medallions, but the news story that according to, let's see here, this I actually had this in my show prep, but I guess they covered it Thursday night. Reuters reporting that New York City will be voting or did vote to cap Uber and Lyft vehicle licenses, which are not the same as I understand it, at least, as taxi medallions. Right, so the taxi medallions are the thing that used to cost. Remember, it was like $500,000 to get one of these. To get one of these things, and then we started to see the price of the New York City medallion drop.
And there are a lot of people who bought those medallions as investments,
correct?
Because they kept going up and up and up.
Because there was a limit to the number of medallions that the city would allow in existence, to the point where you could not even get a new medallion issued. If you wanted to get a medallion, you had to purchase it third party. So you had to buy it from somebody who wanted to sell their existing medallion.
Which always happens when there's a license restriction.
Right, and which again is just, of course, an arbitrary number come up with by the city council. It's the first such cap by any major U.S. city and was part of a package of measures that also included setting a minimum wage for the drivers, which again is ridiculous. It's contrary to how Uber and Lyft have set up their business structure. They've set up a structure to where the drivers are supposed to be contractors. They're not supposed to be paid a wage. They're supposed to get paid per mile, per customer, per mile, that kind of thing. The package, of course, opposed by the major ride-hailing companies is, they claim at the city level, aimed at reducing traffic congestion and increasing driver paychecks in the wake of the explosive growth of for-hire vehicles. So basically, it's protectionism for the taxi drivers. That's what they're doing here. They are trying to,
save this industry.
Right. Come in here at the last minute and protect them from competition.
We can't have the blacksmiths run out of business by these new horseless carriages. We'll have to pass a law.
The mayor, Bill de Blasio, said, quote, "This action will stop the influx of cars contributing to the congestion, grinding our streets to a halt." And then Uber and Lyft responded, Uber saying, quote, "The city's 12-month pause on new vehicle licenses will threaten one of the few reliable transportation options while doing nothing to fix the subways or ease congestion." Lyft responded by saying, quote, "These sweeping cuts to transportation will bring New Yorkers back to an era of struggling to get a ride, particularly for communities of color and in the outer boroughs."
I must say, as a person who has been on a New York subway that was stuck in the middle of the tube there for close to an hour, completely packed, like everybody's touching everybody, kind of packed.
Yep.
Yeah, I really wish the New York government would worry about that problem there.
In an email to in emails to nearly 5 million New Yorkers last month, Uber said riders will face higher prices, longer wait times, and less service in the city's outer suburbs by its drivers. That's because if the city's arbitrarily going to limit the number of drivers, then of course you're going to have to wait longer. Of course prices are going to go up. They said on its website, quote, "New York City is the first city in the country to enact drivers' demands into legislation." This is according to the New York Taxi Workers Alliance, not Uber. They claim this is a victory. Toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE. So if you're in New York City, get ready to start waiting longer and pay more to get where you want to go. 855-450-FREE like freedom, 855-450-3733. And now, of course, this is scary because if New York City can get away with this, how long is it going to be before Seattle, Portland,
all the
LA?
Rest of them. Yes, piling on.
More coming up here. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. You're invited to join us here on the toll-free number, 855-450-FREE. Whether you want to talk about the DNC serving WikiLeaks with a lawsuit over Twitter and what that lawsuit alleges, we haven't even gotten into that yet, beyond just this massive conspiracy allegedly between the Russian government and the Trump administration and WikiLeaks. That's the summary of it, but it's a 66-page suit, which we've been able to easily download because they served it over Twitter. So everybody has access to this particular legal filing. We'll tell you more about that coming up here. Also, we had a gentleman call in about the news on New York City, the first city in the United States to crack down in a big way against Uber and Lyft. Now, we've seen different cities try to do regulations, like Austin, they try to regulate Uber and Lyft, and then there was some level of backing down on that. Uber and Lyft had left the city of Austin as a result of those regulations coming into effect. But this is the first time that a U.S. city has really come at Uber and Lyft in a major way and stopped them entirely from continuing to expand within the city. They have put a freeze, a 12-month freeze on any kind of licenses for ride-hailing services after vehicles in the city have jumped, according to the statistics here, from 12,600 back in 2015 to around 80,000 this year.
That is a big jump.
Yeah, according to the New York City Taxi and Limousine Commission, and they say there are only about 14,000 yellow cabs operating in the cities. You can understand why the taxi drivers are so upset about this, because there are four times as many, you know, more than four times as many Uber and Lyfters driving around as there are taxi drivers. So that's a huge level of competition, and everybody that I've ever talked to, when they have an experience with Uber or Lyft, you know, loves it.
Yeah, I don't think it's the drivers as much in this case as the medallion owners. I mean, a driver can just go and do Uber and Lyft if he wants to make money.
With his own car. A lot of drivers are renting out cars from the taxi company.
Taxi company sounds like it needs a new business model that includes picking up Uber and Lyft people.
Yeah, they're probably not going to do that, Mark. They're going to stick with their old ways as long as they possibly can. They're going to fight tooth and nail. We've seen taxi cab drivers and taxi companies doing some very dirty things. Not just I haven't seen stories out of New York City, but it wouldn't surprise me if they are there. But in Europe and in other cities around the globe, we've actually seen it was Madrid most recently, where taxis were occupying the streets, where they were blocking traffic and just camping out in protest.
Yeah.
Of Uber and Lyft basically just existing there. I think, I don't know if Lyft is in Madrid, but Uber definitely is. So they're desperate, and they're using whatever political connections they have to try to stop any kind of innovation. They've been trying for years, and this is the first real success where the city of New York hasn't rescinded the different licenses that have already been granted. But they are now going ahead and setting a minimum wage for drivers, which is a scary concept, because why should a contractor get paid for time in which they aren't actually working? That's what we're talking about here. If there's a minimum wage, that means that that Uber's essentially going to have to change their entire business model around here.
Yeah, it's not going to work. If they're required to pay a minimum wage, then suddenly I go on the clock on Uber 24 hours a day just sitting at my house sleeping.
Right, because normally with Uber, if you're on the clock or if you're logged into the app, they will send you a ride if you're in the app, and then the clock starts ticking. You don't get paid for just sitting logged into the app. If that's what New York City's trying to make happen, trying to get the Uber drivers to get paid for just sitting around, I hope Uber sues over this, because that's essentially...
Well, you can't sue over a statute.
Well, it's a forcible conversion of their business from a contract-based business to an employee-based
business.
Yes, also
known as statutes.
Right. So basically, what would you say? Uber's only solution is to leave the city?
I mean, yeah.
Which they're not going to want to do, but this could be.
But you can't just sue the state and be like, "I sue the state because they're passing a law."
Well, I hate the city of New York.
There's regulations. I sue the state.
It's an ordinance. It's an ordinance, not a statute, right? It's not the state level. It's New York City.
Different, but yeah.
So you're saying there would be no standing against that, even
to sue the state because they passed a reg
the statute was illegal?
Like, no,
couldn't they say the ordinance?
I mean,
was
if it was illegal, they could say that, but it's not.
Can they do that? I mean, can an ordinance actually...
This is the 50th freest state of the union.
Yeah. I mean,
this is the Empire State. Yeah. I don't know if they... I'm not the attorney that young Ms. Johnson is here, but I can tell you that, yeah, they'll do whatever the heck they want.
All right, so if you want to comment here, you're welcome to. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. Speaking of Melanie, she does taxes. She's an accountant by trade. She can handle your bookkeeping if you're a smaller business, right? Like, who are you targeting? Who do you want to talk to help out with their business?
I mean, small businesses. So if you're not, listed on a stock exchange and you don't have just kind of a massive amount of locations in several states to the point where you have, if you're not to the point where you have an internal accounting department, then you're a small business.
Okay.
So people who either don't have time to, or they're large enough to point where, you know, they kind of need to make sure this money is being managed properly on a tax basis so that I do their books every month and I look through and see if they need to change anything, move some money around, move some expenses around, do whatever you need to do to make sure that then at the end of the year, you're set for keeping as much of your own money as possible.
And Melanie can help you with that. She hates the government. She's a real anarchist. And so if you want an anarchist to do your accounting for you and help you with taxes, then you should get in touch with her directly by going to tax.freetalklive.com. That'll take you right over to her website. That's tax.freetalklive.com. I switched over here to the Mother Jones article because, you know, they are a pretty lefty magazine. And I wanted to get their perspective on what the New York City Council has done here with Uber and Lyft. As they point out here, they're forcing the companies to pay drivers a minimum wage and setting a cap on how many cars can be on the road. New York City's regulations could set a precedent for other cities across the country, which is, in my opinion, the worst part about this, that face increasingly congested roads and drivers frustrated with the deprecating value of their services, or depreciating rather. The set of bills will give the Taxi Limousine Commission the authority to instate minimum fare requirements, regulate minimum earnings for drivers.
No, it's over.
And institute a 12-month cap on additional licenses while the city evaluates the effect on companies, including Lyft, Uber, Juno, and Via, on city congestion. Many of the details still need to be clarified by the commission, though the guaranteed wage has to at least match the state minimum wage of $13.50. Rising to $15 in December. My God, I didn't realize New York State had gone up that high in minimum wage.
So I can tell you this. I used to drive a cab from between gigs in Sarasota, Florida at one point. And the one thing the taxi cab company wanted from me, and they were pretty pushy about it, even though when I signed up with them, that wasn't the deal, was they wanted a 12-hour shift out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas an Uber driver, you're not committing to a 12-hour shift. So I had to go spend my own money to get a taxi cab license and all that stuff. And I did. And, you know, you get one of their stinky cars. Yep. And you drive it around. And, you know, the same car that some drunk puked in last night. And, whereas an Uber driver, it's their car. They decide,
they take care
of
them.
If they don't want to pick somebody up, they don't pick them up. And, you know, they're not working for a company.
Well, now, if you refuse rides, eventually Uber is going to cut you off, right? So you don't get to decide as the driver who to pick up. You don't know who's trying to hail you, right? Like, you don't know whether the person is old or young, or, you know, male or
completely
female.
Completely inebriated.
Yeah, you don't know. Although Uber was working on a system to detect whether the person is drunk based on how they use their phone. So that may be coming, but I don't know if that's currently something that the drivers have access to.
I can tell you I also stopped doing rides specifically on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evenings at night, because I just didn't like the clientele I had to deal with, which was fine. The taxi cab company put me on in the mornings, and I'm, you know, taking little old ladies from Longboat Key to the airport.
Yeah, so right now it's not clear exactly how they're going to enforce this minimum wage. That's what I was trying to find out, was, you know, how is Uber going
to... How are they not going to enforce? They're going to have a bunch of annoying people who think they want to be Uber drivers but don't understand the concept of being self-employed, go and rat them out to the city. That's how they're going to enforce it. That's how they enforce every employer law.
I guess I wasn't asking the right question, or I didn't use the right words there. What I mean is, will this be something where, like you were saying, Mark, where as soon as somebody logs into the app, they start getting paid? Can they force... I mean, of course they can, right? They're the government. Can they force Uber to do it that way? So I'm wondering, you know, what... If you're in New York City and you're an Uber or Lyft driver or a rideshare driver, have you received any kind of notice from Uber about how they're going to handle this? What are they going to what's the reaction going to be? We're coming up.
The Bitcoin.com wallet is a simple and powerful full-featured wallet that allows you to send and receive Bitcoin, BTC, and Bitcoin Cash, BCH, with anyone, anywhere in the world. It supports both single and multi-signature wallets and is available in multiple languages. The Bitcoin.com wallet is available on Windows, Linux, Mac, Android, and iOS devices. Use the Bitcoin.com wallet to buy, send, store, and receive both Bitcoin, BTC, and Bitcoin Cash, BCH. Learn more at wallet.bitcoin.com. That's wallet.bitcoin.com.
Free Talk Live.
This is Free Talk Live, and you can take control of the airwaves here as we launch into the second hour of the program. As always, you're invited to join us here, especially if you are a driver with one of the ride-sharing services, ride-hailing services like Uber or Lyft, which is now under attack in the city of New York, worse than ever. And it's been a successful attack this time, where the New York City Council, according to Business Insider, voted 36-6 to require ride-hailing apps like Uber and Lyft to pay their drivers a minimum wage, which, according to the story, is almost $15 an hour. It's going to go up, apparently, later this year to $15 per hour. It's currently $13.50 per hour, which is a complete change to Uber's business model. This has been something that when the drivers out in California, and I think it was Massachusetts as well, had sued Uber, they lost. Because you remember that? You remember that story where the drivers, some uppity drivers decided they wanted to be employees. They wanted, you know, employee benefits and health care coverage and minimum wage and all that.
Then go be an employee then.
Right, somewhere else. And they filed a lawsuit against Uber and, you know, the others. I think it might have just been Uber, but anyway, they lost in that case. Now, I forget. I feel like they won in the UK, but then Uber appealed that, and I'm not sure where that case sits. And it's certainly possible the drivers also appealed here in the United States. I don't think it's gone to the Supreme Court. I should probably check that just to see what the status of those cases are. But the difference, the legal difference between being a contractor and an employee here in the United States is something that has been hashed out in court before.
Right.
You know, this isn't a new case. It's just the latest iteration of
people who work, work for Uber do not fit the definition of employee.
Right,
they
but that
come
has,
and go as they please.
That doesn't really have a whole lot to do with New York's laws about how much you have to pay people. So Uber drivers are really solidly contractors, but that's IRS regs. That's not New York City wage requirements.
Okay, but how can you be a contractor and get paid a minimum wage at the same time?
Because one is the federal government's rules on who has to pay FICA. Mm-hmm. And one is New York City's rules on how much you have to pay people. They have nothing to do with each other.
Huh. I guess I don't know, you know, I don't know a whole lot about employing versus contracting.
New York City can also just say it's illegal to have subcontractors as, you know, taxi drivers, right, which is effectively what they are.
If I hire a contractor, I can pay them. If they want to get paid by the hour, that can be part of the contract. If they want to get paid by the job, that can also be the way the contract works.
Generally speaking, yes.
Right. So Uber's current contract with these drivers is you get paid based on what you drive. You get paid based on where you're going, who you're taking, all that.
Which
is
what makes sense for that industry.
Right. And so now New York City's coming in there saying, well, that's all going to change. So we're just going to go ahead and change everything about how your business model works. And if Uber puts up with it and doesn't some, and you say they can't sue over this.
Yeah, you can't sue because they passed a statute that regulates you, no.
I don't know what their other choice would be besides to say, well, we're just going to pull out of New York City.
Well, I mean, it would be the same choice everyone has to the extent that you would classify that as a choice. If the city I'm living in is a hellhole,
yeah.
I leave and go somewhere else.
Right. So anyway,
I suppose that's a choice.
36-6 was the vote in the New York City Council. Council members say they were concerned with the alarming rate at which drivers are signing up for these services, especially since a recent report indicates that ride-hailing apps are actually making traffic worse, not better, they say. Transportation analyst Bruce Schaller estimated that ride-hailing services has resulted in a 160% increase in driving on city streets. The council's cap on driver hiring, they say, is meant to curb this growth. Those sweeping cuts...
I can't understand why anybody owns a car in New York City. Surely somebody does. I mean, there's plenty of people who do it.
Some people probably sometimes drive out of New York City.
She's find some place to park it at the end of the subway line. It's got to make more sense.
These sweeping cuts to transportation will bring New Yorkers back to an era of struggling to get a ride, according to Lyft's vice president of public policy. Uber was also recently in the spotlight in New York City when the New York Unemployment Insurance Board ruled that Uber must provide unemployment benefits to its drivers, effectively classifying them as employees instead of Uber's preferred classification of independent contractors. So apparently this was already happening before this latest move where this Unemployment Insurance Board basically said, nope, you can't have contractors. Screw all your contracts. Obviously, the government does whatever it wants to do. We know that. But wasn't one of the purposes of the government to uphold people's contracts?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, so if you buy into statist theology, yes.
Which I don't. I'm just, you know, just reminding people that's what they said at one time, and now they're, you know, completely changing that. In a statement, an Uber-linked local advocacy group, Tech NYC, called the measure a step backwards, saying that diminishing the supply of ride-hailing vehicles won't diminish demand, resulting in higher prices and longer waits for citizens. The city's 12-month pause on new vehicle license will threaten one of the reliable transportation options while doing nothing to fix subways or ease congestion. Anyway, that's your story there. It's terrible news. I'm curious to see exactly how this is going to get handled. Is Uber going to stick with this? Are they going to jump through all these hoops? Obviously, New York's a huge market. There's a lot of money to be made in New York City. It must really be... I imagine it's going to be a difficult choice to make because Uber has walked away from markets before. When Austin was coming in with its regulation that required drivers to go down to the city or the police department and get a separate background check done, pay a separate fee to the government in order to get these checks done, Uber and Lyft said, well, see ya, Austin. And they just stopped serving. They stopped doing pickups in Austin. They would still do pickups in like Round Rock or the communities that surround Austin.
But and
they
not
would
Austin
drive,
proper.
Right. They would drive those people into Austin, but they would not pick that person up from Austin and then take them back out. So they weren't doing pickups in Austin as a
Which
result of that.
Which is really horrible if you don't know that ahead of time and you're trying to go somewhere and come back.
Right. And then you get to find out you got to take a cab.
I was like, well, you're stuck
Surprise!
In Austin. Good luck.
So, but they're back in Austin, and I'm not sure exactly what cleared up to make them come back in. So it's not
I'm sure the government compromised.
Maybe. And so it's not unheard of for Uber to make a stand and, you know,
well,
and
I mean,
pull
and
out.
So this
but
isn't
New York
really
City
even intended. I don't think this is intended to reclassify and restructure Uber. I think this is intended to make Uber leave. And so if
really?
I was Uber, that would make me more inclined to not do it just because I'm obnoxious like that.
But then you gotta jump the
hoops. Business decision is, do I? But the proper business decision is GTFO New York City.
Yeah.
As a general concept, the proper, regardless of what the question is, the proper business decision is GTFO New York City.
It may be the best choice. And indeed, if that is what the taxi cab, and I think you're probably right, that is what they want them to do. They want Uber to leave. Because this may be such a fundamental change to Uber to where we already know they're having trouble making money, right? Like Uber's in debt. They're not a profitable company, as I understand it. So if it's going to be less profitable to operate in New York City, even though it is one of the biggest markets in the entire world, it may just be better for Uber to say, well, we want to keep our business model intact and we're in 60 countries or whatever, so we'll be all right if we leave New York City. Sorry,
what
drivers.
What happened in Austin was Uber and Lyft pulled out, but
that's right.
Lots of little ride-sharing apps popped up all over. So,
true.
For instance, get Cell 411 or Cell 411, the app, get cell411.com is, you know, an app that people could use that it doesn't have the fees and it doesn't have the opportunity to get caught. It's decentralized.
Great point, because there is no company behind Get Cell 411. There's you know, the programmers or whatever who made the program, but
they're not making money, and there's nothing to sue.
Right? Yeah. There's no. When you hire somebody through GetCell411, you're paying the driver directly. The driver's collecting from you, not through the app, but yep. directly in the car, whether it's cash or cryptocurrency, or maybe the driver has their own, you know, swipe thing for a credit card or something, because they could do that. So that's a great solution, Mark, is for drivers that, you know, if Uber and Lyft pull out and drivers, independent drivers are looking yep. for an option.
You can't stop progress.
That'd be the way to do it. GetCell411.com. This is Free Talk Live. You can dial toll-free and join us right here. Our number 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. And we do have Skype. Oh, no, we don't. Sorry. That was in my head because I was removing the Skype imagery from our cam. Somebody actually just reminded me, I think it was Razor Boy in the chat room on the Twitch chat, that, hey, your cam feed still shows the old Skype call-in info.
Ooh.
So I was actually in the process of removing that as we were starting the segment. So give me another moment. I'll get that taken care of during the next break. Thank you, RazorBoy_Gaming, for the heads up on that. Because now we're moving to Discord, and we've actually got people waiting there, so we're going back to the Discord calls here. Discord.lrn.fm will get you in there. We've got three call-in lines. One is open for you right now over at Discord.lrn.fm. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by Bitcoin.com. If you want to get into cryptocurrency, there's no better place to go to get started than, of course, the easiest URL to remember. That's Bitcoin.com. They've got some basic information to get you started, and then the latest news headlines to keep you in the loop with what's going on in the industry and across the world in the world of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. Once again, that's news.bitcoin.com. You want to buy your first Bitcoin or BTC or Bitcoin Cash, you can do that through Bitcoin.com as well. They even have mining pools that you can join for both Bitcoin BTC and Bitcoin Cash.
Yeah, I'm part of that.
Bitcoin.com, as we go back to your calls and thoughts. Let's talk to Zach. He's in Minnesota. Zach, you're on Free Talk Live on our Discord server.
Hey, Ian. Hey. And everybody there.
Yes, sir.
So I tuned in right at the right moment, apparently, with the conversation about Uber. For a year, beginning about January of 17 to February of this year, I was doing Uber part-time on Saturday nights, partly just to see what it was all about, because it was kind of up and coming still, I guess. So mostly just to see what it was like, but also just to save up a little bit of money. So I was doing Saturday nights from about 9 at night to 3 a.m. And I think, Mark, you said you used to drive taxi, so you know that's the
money
the
time
best shift.
Yeah.
a lot of nonsense, but it paid okay. I stopped doing it right around February because, at least for me, everyone values their time differently. For me, the value just wasn't there. Uber and Lyft have had a race to the bottom,
yeah,
for pricing.
Mm-hmm.
And these days, at least on Uber, the driver's getting about 30 to 40% of what the customer pays.
What?
It's supposed to be a lot higher than that.
It was doing Uber, it was 80%, and they lowered it to 75%. Now, are you talking about they officially reduced the rate, or are you saying after you pay for maintenance, after you pay for gasoline?
No, before even all that.
What?
Uber lately has, I don't think corrupt is a strong enough word. And this is a big reason why I stopped. What they've done recently, and I guess I can really only speak for Minneapolis and our market, but I imagine it's everywhere else. What they've done, they've not only lowered the rates, which they actually just did here last month. It's now 61 cents a mile and I think 17 cents per minute. And realistically, to operate a vehicle, they're probably profiting about 10 cents a mile, these drivers. But what they've done here recently is they've played games with the wording of the agreements and everything to where the driver gets a cut of the fare. But they've added on all of these booking fees, and they've done this upfront pricing that's technically not part of the
it's
fair.
It's not the fair.
So what they've done, and I'm not exaggerating, this is, and again, this is just my experience. Realistically, the driver, from what the customer pays, once Uber's done playing their game with everything, they're getting about 20, 30%. And I'm making those numbers up, but it's in that ballpark. Uber is taking the majority.
So what about tips? This is what my complaint about tips from the beginning was, is if you tip Uber drivers, then Uber is going to incorporate it into the app. So once it's incorporated in the app, then they're saying, oh, well, the drivers are getting this much money or that much money. And then they're going to lower the pay of the drivers because they can. And, you know, what were the tips like?
Well, at least for me, in my experience, not many people tipped. And I attributed that to a couple different things because, of course, I have a sparkling personality. So that wasn't it.
Yes.
I think it was a couple things. One, from day one, Uber's old CEO basically told people not to.
Right.
For whatever various reasons. So I think people got that stuck in their head. The second thing is, at least my clientele tended to be the drunk college crowd. And I just don't think they probably tip well. Anyway,
they wanted to go home. They didn't want a DUI, but they weren't going to tip. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But what I think with this whole thing in New York City, and I think Ian, you had brought up the UK too. And actually, Uber in the UK is facing a lawsuit from the taxi drivers who have said that Uber basically stole all their business. That's ongoing. I think that happened like last week. Something came out about that.
Jeez.
But with this whole thing in New York City, it's actually I think it's pretty. Not that I agree with it, but I think there was a question of how this might be done. I think it would actually be reasonably easy to implement on Uber's side. Right now, there's already like weekly guarantees and things that drivers can get where basically at the end of the week, if you didn't make X, Uber will shore up the difference or something like that. So they know how many hours you were online and they know how much you made. So in concept, if a local entity was going to enforce some sort of wage or something like that, it wouldn't be hard to implement.
Right, so it's technologically possible. That doesn't mean it's a viable business plan.
Well, that's a whole separate conversation.
The question is whether
it's really not, though.
Uber's viable anyway. Like, Uber is losing money and has lost money, I believe, every single quarter.
Well, right, but that so just because a particular company in an industry isn't viable does not mean that a business structure isn't viable. So the fact that a retail store went out of business does not mean that brick and mortar stores are not a viable industry.
Definitely true. Zach, any other observations you want to share?
That was it for me.
Hey, you sounded great. Thanks for calling us on Discord tonight. I definitely appreciate it. And once again, you can jump on our Discord on-air call-in lines over at discord.lrn.fm, like Gene the Christian Anarchist on also on one of our Discord lines. Go ahead, Gene.
Hey, guys. I'm going to shift gears on you.
Okay, so to speak.
I'm currently in Alaska.
That's
and
clever.
Lived in Alaska for several years. In fact, that's where I met my wife in Fairbanks.
Really? Okay.
Our son was born there, so I guess he could claim to be an Alaskan native. What I'm calling about is I've been here a couple times, and each time I come here, it seems to be I'm a little bit more disappointed with how liberal Alaska is becoming, because it's supposed to be the last frontier, you know, rough and tumble culture. And
yeah, there's supposed to be a lot of independence people up there.
Yeah, they also started paying people to move to Alaska and live there.
There's the Alaska Independence Party that I believe advocates for secession. But we'll get you back on here and talk more about what's going on in Alaska here in moments. And, of course, your calls and thoughts are welcome. 855-450-FREE. And I did pull up the story that Zach referenced about Uber being sued by cabbies in the UK. We're coming up here on Free Talk Live.
Do you operate a retail business and are looking for a solution for point-of-sale cryptocurrency acceptance? It's never been easier thanks to AnyPay.global. There's no paperwork or approval process to open an account. If you already have a tablet, you're almost done. Just sign up at AnyPay.global, drop your personal crypto wallet addresses on the setup page, and then load the app. That's it. You're accepting cryptocurrency like Bitcoin and Dash at your store. Get started now at AnyPay.global. AnyPay.global.
It's Free Talk Live. You can join us on the radio. We're talking about the latest on Uber and New York City cracking down against Uber, restricting the number of Ubers and other ride-sharing companies that can be on the road, or drivers that can be on the road at any given moment within the city, restricting the amount of licenses they're going to be handing out. They're putting a freeze on it for 12 months. And now also mandating a minimum wage for the Uber and Lyft drivers in the city, which is a complete change to the business model of those companies. And so it's going to be interesting to see how all this plays out. It's horrible for the people in New York City who are going to have a tougher time now getting rides to different places. They're going to have to pay more. It's going to be more like the old days where you're stuck with the crappy cab companies and the subways. I mean, there's still going to be a bunch of Ubers and Lyfts, but the market won't actually get to decide how many there should be at any given moment. Then we had Zach call in, who had kind of a negative experience driving for Uber, saying they've whittled down the amounts over time through various different techniques that they're actually paying their drivers. And so,
to some extent, that's how business works, right? Like, so business should be paying the least amount that it can possibly get away with, mm-hmm. and still retain the highest quality employee that they need to do their job.
Well, so, whether that's happening or not is another question. They may be losing some of the
business,
higher quality
not
employees.
Not mine. Yeah. I'm just saying that it is in the business model of a business to pay as little as possible so long as they retain the best employees that they need.
Right, but paying kind of risky wages, which is or risky as to whether or not it's profitable for the employee or not, which sounds like what they're doing based on what he said and was my understanding of Uber anyway, that is absolutely not a way to accomplish that.
You also have to remember that even though what you're saying may be true, it's not happening in a vacuum. So they're also competing against these other companies who
That's
would love
how we
to
know
take
what the
their,
wage is supposed to be.
Who would love to take their better drivers away from them, and if they offer a little bit more, then they might be able to do that. Let's go to back to the phones here, though. We got Gene the Christian Anarchist. He's in Alaska, and you're saying that things are changing there in Alaska. The kind of people aren't as independent as they used to be. That's your impression, and please continue with what you were saying there.
Yeah, well, it's the I would say the liberalization of Alaska. The last frontier is becoming kind of wussified and set up as through the public education and all of that. It seems like the young people are becoming more liberal. And for instance, we went to Denali Park, and the movie that they show you there, there are four hikers going through the Denali Park, and three women and one guy, and the guy is there only, I guess, as a figurehead, because the women are doing all the talking throughout the whole video. It's like men are not allowed to speak, you know, that kind of an attitude. So okay.
Did anybody get mauled by a bear in the video?
No, and there's really very few bear attacks, and I've learned that.
Well, there's about to be more if you're getting lower quality people.
Right. Well, especially if they're going to go out there and take selfies with the bears.
Smear themselves in peanut butter to attract the bear.
So do you think it has to do with what Melanie suggested, which is the welfare money that Alaska's
handing out? Which started in 1980, according to Google.
You're talking about the oil money?
I wouldn't classify it as oil money. They just started paying you to live there.
The claim is that it's because of the oil
revenue. But I do think that all of the handouts, you know, just welfare in general, the money that the Alaskan money is basically just a rebate from the taxes on oil.
Right. It is related to oil, is my understanding.
Well, that's the
right.
Yeah, but it's like, and that's, or at least now it's like $16,000 a year or something like that.
$16,000?
Oh, no.
$1,600.
No. Yeah.
It used to be like $1,600. I think currently it's down around $800.
Oh, really?
It's been going down.
Does it get divvied up different based on how many people live there, or does it actually have to do with revenues, or both?
It's per resident. Every resident, no matter what age, even my wife's nieces and nephews, which are 11 and 8 years old, they each get a check.
But wait, so it's time to have kids.
But wait. Does the number change? If all of a sudden there's a population boom in Alaska and the residency goes up by double, will the check amount go down by half?
Oh, yeah. I believe that it's a certain amount divided amongst right. the number of residents.
Right, right. Okay, so it is revenue-based to some extent as far as they're and divvied by the residents.
Yeah, but that's not going to stop rent-seeking behavior.
No, I understand. I was just asking questions about the handout and how it worked.
But anyway, I saw it's kind of a bad omen, I guess, that the last frontier where the rough and tumble are supposed to be living is becoming more and more liberal.
You're going to have to move out to New Hampshire to find the Granite Staters.
I think I agree with you there.
Excellent. Anything else you want to share from Alaska, Gene?
Yeah, well, it's beautiful. Come and visit.
So is California. Thanks for the call, man. I appreciate hearing from you. In fact, Alaska was going to be, it was on number 3, I think, on the Free State Project vote. When the Free State Project had 10 different states in which they had their first 5,000 members.
Yeah, Alaska's too big for that.
That was for whom I was rooting. What you have to understand is Alaska isn't big from a population standpoint. So
no, it's not.
But it then can be. If they're like, you know what, there's too many anarchists all in one place. Oh, oops, we raised welfare by 10 times. Here, have some degenerate liberals.
So the
Alaska's population is 740,000.
740,000.
Yeah, but about Vermont.
What you have to do is you have to look at what the plot points of where those people live for per 100 person for a red dot. Mm-hmm. And then you will find that those people live along that little strip of Alaska that ought to be Canada. And then up into the up into the sort of Alaskan part, but not much farther than that. Then it gets very sparse after that. I mean, there's some people, of course, who live in the Aleutian Islands and way the heck out there, but it's not much population-wise.
According to JunoEmpire.com, earlier this year, Alaska's population fell for the first time in 29 years as thousands flee the state. More than 8,500 people moved away during the recession, apparently.
Yeah, so if the Free State Project had picked Alaska, then most of it would be based on them going and looking for just a few little pockets of places, and then obviously it doesn't have the advantage of New Hampshire where you can
spend easy to get around
1 hour driving from southwestern New Hampshire.
Pretty much
to get
anywhere
to the capital.
You live in New Hampshire, if you're in southern New Hampshire, you're probably no more than an hour or so away from the capital.
That's correct.
Whereas in Alaska, my God, you could be a day's journey or something like that. It's ridiculous there. But it was my third choice.
I looked up an Alaskan population map. I've got something for brown bear density.
All right. So back to the story here. Again, if you want to call in, you can. Toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. But since we're talking about Uber and Zach had mentioned this new lawsuit in London, because remember we talked about this the case against them to try to force them to have employee drivers rather than contractor drivers, and I believe that one's still moving through the court system there. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, but this is a different suit. Uber is now facing a $650 million U.S. dollar class action lawsuit, about £500 million. From some of its most vociferous detractors, drivers of the iconic London Black Cabs. 13 trade unions and London cabbie representatives are coming together to pursue high court action against Uber. It's another headache for Uber's CEO Dara Khosrowshahi in London after Uber just came through a battle to hold on to its operating license in the British capital. Organizations included the Licensed Taxi Drivers Association, which alone has 11,000 members, claiming that Uber has operated so-called unlawfully since launching in 2012 in London and had the intention of, quote, causing loss to the licensed taxi trade.
That's not its intention. Its intention is to take some of the transportation market, which results in loss. But
yes, but don't you understand? The cabbies believe they own that business.
Yeah, they
and
certainly
that
do.
When Uber came in, business, some of it, went over to Uber, and they are suing as a result of that. That's basically what this lawsuit is.
That's what
them
it says,
crying because they couldn't retain through competition their fares.
They've got bad old business models.
So they're going to fight, like I said, tooth and nail to keep things status quo. We'll tell you more about the lawsuit filed in London here in moments. Your calls and thoughts also welcome. Whether it's on ride sharing or the DNC suing WikiLeaks, which we got to come back around to, or you can bring up anything you want and take control of the airwaves on Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live, inviting you to join us right here. The toll-free number, 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Discord as well. In fact, three on-air call-in lines available to you over at discord.lrn.fm. In fact, I think that's where most of our calls have come from here tonight thus far. discord.lrn.fm. Just grab the app for any phone type, you know, iOS or Android. And then there's also the apps for Linux and Windows and Macintosh. So pretty much whatever operating system you're using, you can get Discord for. discord.lrn.fm. And you can grab the app over at discordapp.com first. Let's go to your calls and thoughts. You can bring up what you want. Jim is on the line in Cedar City, Utah. Jim, you're on Free Talk Live. Hello? Jim going once?
I think he's playing the radio
Jim
for us.
Jim going twice.
It's nice.
That's awfully nice of you to think about us there, Jim. Appreciate it. All right, let's go back to the story here from businessinsider.com. But if I wanted to do music radio, I'd still be doing music radio. And that was pretty boring work, so I wanted to get into talk a long, long time ago.
Keeps you busy.
All right, so Uber is facing a $650 million U.S. dollar class action lawsuit from who? In the UK, the taxi drivers, various different organizations come together, 13 different trade unions and London cabbie representatives have filed the action against Uber. One of those unions, just one of them, the Licensed Taxi Drivers Association, has 11,000 members. They claim Uber has operated unlawfully and has caused loss to the licensed taxi trade. Put simply, according to Business Insider, the lawsuit aims to demonstrate that Uber's arrival has directly led to a loss of earnings for London black cab drivers.
Oh, poor babies. They don't like competition. They don't like it.
As I understand it, taxi cab drivers in London have to be very skilled at what they do. However, I may not need that every time I need a ride.
Skilled how?
Well, they're It's the
same way in which doctors are skilled when you really just need a permission slip to go to Walgreens. It's like, I didn't really need you to go to medical school. I kind of knew what I needed.
Thanks. Right, I just want some amoxicillin.
I mean, some people are better drivers than others.
No, it's not about driving skills.
It's about history, city knowledge.
Oh, I see what you mean.
I don't need my cab driver to be a historian. I just
You're
need
saying
him
like,
to know how to get there.
On the left, you'll see the blah, blah museum, that kind of thing.
Can you get me from Whitehall to Bow Bells?
Me?
Yes.
I've never been to London before.
You are unqualified to be a black car driver in London.
I would never go to a city in which, you know, I'd never been before.
I didn't claim
and pretend
that you would.
Well, yeah, I am unqualified to drive in London because I don't know what London looks like.
I don't even know what side of the road they drive on.
That doesn't mean that you need a PhD in history to drive a taxi in London.
That doesn't mean that you don't need the PhD in history to get the license to drive a taxi cab in London.
Right, so that's a regulatory issue, not a
sure
anything else issue.
I'm only saying that they're very skilled, and sometimes I don't need skills.
And an irrelevant skill.
Agreed. Same with doctors, right?
Yes.
Okay. It's worth pointing out that in London, you have to be very skilled, and in New York, you can get off the plane and start driving a cab. Like, there's a difference between the skill levels between
You have to be very skilled? Is this a requirement to get a license?
Yes. You have to pass the history exams.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
This isn't. They're not doing it as a favor to you, Ian.
Yeah.
They're not doing it because it gets them paid more money. They're doing it because it gets them the license.
Wow. I had no idea. London.
That's why I'm telling you.
Okay. I just thought you were impressed with how knowledgeable their drivers were, not that it was a requirement.
I've never taken a cab in London.
London Cabbie Group Action, which is coordinating the lawsuit, worked with economists, they claim, to estimate that it could stack up to £500 million in lost revenue over the past 5 years. A previous estimate put it at double this. The law firm Michon de Rea, which is experiencing class action suits, or what they call in the UK group action, will bring the claim on behalf of the London Cabbie Group Action.
That doesn't sound like the kind of thing that an economist would predict to me.
Well, they hired them to make those predictions, so they did what they were told.
They very literally hired them to make those predictions, yeah.
Harbor Litigation Funding is funding the dispute. Uber declined to comment. It's understood the company is not clear what the basis for any legal action would be. Uber has 40,000 drivers in London and has agreed to be more transparent and provide better training for drivers as part of retaining its license in June. Quote, we recognize there needs to be a level playing field between mini cabs and licensed cabs on London streets, but we believe Uber has operated unlawfully, resulting in a loss of earnings for many qualified licensed cab drivers, according to the secretary of the Licensed Taxi Drivers Association. Drivers of black cabs have a long history of antipathy toward their Uber rivals. Cab drivers have staged blockades in parts of London in protest at Uber, while the vitriol is often most pronounced on social media, where cabbies often post images of Uber drivers involved in crashes. The below.
Yeah, you just can't get people in the United States to do this kind of stuff, but over in Europe, man, oh, they're ready for some rock throwing protests.
Right, like we were talking about with in Madrid, where they were in the streets. I don't even know. Maybe they still are. It wasn't within the last 2 weeks, or it was just within the last 2 weeks that they were protesting.
I remember
there.
It seems like it was less than a year ago that farmers were protesting in France by driving their tractors into, might have been Paris.
Oh, really? Blocking
just
the streets?
Shutting everything down.
Wow.
Got to be a real blast hanging out with these folks.
The toll-free number, again, tonight here, 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. So there you go. There's not really much more to this story besides the taxi drivers are upset. They believe they own their revenue. They believe they own their customers, and it's insulting. I mean, basically, they're blaming Uber for outcompeting them, and they're suing them over it. And that's what's happening there.
People get used to a something happening. Historically, yeah. Something happens.
Who moved my cheese?
Somebody moved their cheese. And that's the way it is. So, for instance, keeping immigrants out because they'll take my job, that's the same thing. You don't have a job. If you work for someone, you don't have a job. A job is an agreement between two or more people that you will get paid to do a task. Now, if somebody withdraws from that agreement, it's just like a marriage. If somebody withdraws from the agreement to be married, you don't have a marriage anymore.
Well, and usually job contracts aren't for life. I've never seen a job contract where somebody hired somebody for the term of their life. So they're not actually violating it to
a lot of people think that that's the case, though.
All right, so let's switch gears back, since we actually started with an international story on WikiLeaks, where according to CBS News, the Democratic National Committee has filed a suit against WikiLeaks, along with the Donald Trump campaign, Donald Trump Jr., Roger Stone was named in the suit, and Julian Assange in WikiLeaks.
Who's Roger Stone?
He's some consultant guy. They had him speak, shockingly, at some Free State Project event a couple of years ago, even though he's like total Trumper guy. He's not a libertarian or anything like that. He hangs around with Alex Jones, this guy, Roger Stone. Anyway, he's like he's a Trumper guy. So I don't know what his involvement was. He was probably working on the Trump campaign or something like that. He's one of the people named in this suit, which was, again, served over Twitter to WikiLeaks because they couldn't find WikiLeaks in any meaningful sense to actually serve them in person. According to the story at CBS News, on April 21st, the WikiLeaks Twitter account tweeted, quote, Democrats have gone all Scientology against WikiLeaks. We read the DNC lawsuit. Its primary claim against WikiLeaks is that we published their, quote, trade secrets, unquote. Scientology infamously tried this trick when we published their secret Bibles. Didn't work out well for them, unquote. So I guess WikiLeaks did essentially...
They don't seem scared.
No, why should they? Nobody knows who they are. This is like the equivalent of suing Anonymous. I mean, you know who Julian Assange is.
Well, except if you then also didn't have a valid claim against Anonymous.
Indeed. WikiLeaks seems to tweet daily, said the DNC in a motion made to the judge last month. The DNC also noted that there's some legal precedent for serving a lawsuit on Twitter. The U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California, they say, decided service by Twitter was a reasonable way to alert a defendant who has an active Twitter account. In the months before the 2016 election, WikiLeaks released nearly 20,000 internal DNC emails, many of which were related to Hillary Clinton. They later released thousands of emails belonging to John Podesta, who was Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign chairman.
Yeah, I mean, WikiLeaks has released a lot of stuff prior to whatever is related to Hillary Clinton, and the government's gone after them many times. I think the judge just wants to see whether or not this will bring down, you know, hey, can we get WikiLeaks over here? Because we'd like to talk to them about a lot of things.
Yeah, if I were them, I would completely ignore this service. But I think it would be interesting because in all like civil suits, they usually have a summary of their case because this is a 66-page case that they filed here. So obviously we're not going to read through all 66 pages, but let's read the, you know, the beginning of the summary here. What are the allegations that the DNC is making against...
You say it's interesting, but I wouldn't find it very interesting if I was WikiLeaks. It's not interesting to find out what they'll do to you in trial. Ask Ross.
No, I'm
Albert.
Interested in what the allegations are. The first sentence is, no one is above the law. We're coming up here. This is Free Talk Live.
We have some good news. The indictments against Ross Ulbricht in the District of Maryland were dismissed with prejudice, meaning they can never be refiled. This is especially good because those indictments contain the only charge ever made that Ross engaged in murder for hire. This was a serious allegation that Ross Ulbricht denies. It was never prosecuted or ruled on by a jury, but was trumpeted by the federal government and the media as if it were proven fact. The Maryland court held these indictments for almost 5 years, poisoning Ross's case and leaving him under a cloud of unproven allegations. As explained in Ross's appeal to the Supreme Court, the fact that the judge used these allegations to give Ross a draconian sentence of double life without parole violated his Sixth Amendment right to a jury trial. Judges are required to issue sentences based on convictions decided by a jury, not unproven allegations, never even charged at trial. Although this is a positive development, the dropped indictment will not set Ross free. Now, a presidential pardon is Ross's only hope of freedom. Sign the petition at FreeRoss.org. FreeRoss.org.
It is Free Talk Live, launching here into the third hour of the program. You're invited, as always, to join us. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. And we've got Discord, where we've got a few different Discord call-in lines available to you. In fact, we're going to go right back to those coming up here in a moment. But with you first, it's Ian.
Melanie.
And Mark.
For those of you just tuning in, we've had two major topics on the show tonight. One was one that we started the show with about the DNC filing lawsuit, not just against the Trump campaign, but also against WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, and the Russian government. The lawsuit includes the Russian Federation, a.k.a., quote, Russia, as well as the General Staff of the Armed Forces of the Russian Federation, the GRU. And a few different specific Russian operatives, and again, the Donald Trump campaign, some Donald Trump-related people like Donald Trump Jr. and Roger Stone, and then also Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. We've actually got this the suit here, the civil suit. It's 66 pages, but there's an introduction that I think is worth sharing just to give you some idea of what the claims are in this lawsuit, because, Melanie, you laughed at it on its face, and you haven't actually heard the
Yeah, there's a couple of filings in my life where it was like, I don't know if they just like mixed up the janitor and the lawyer that day, or the mechanic and the lawyer, and just like, I don't know why.
You would think the DNC would hire somebody who, you know, knew what they were doing, or maybe they
you
just hired...
You would think that you don't start legal filings with the sentence, no one is above the law. And maybe you should, I don't know, state a cause of action. That would help.
All right, so we'll get into that, but first we go to the phones and to Discord, where Mortified Penguin is on the line. Hello, Penguin. Mortified Penguin, do we have him there? He's there. I just don't think he's talking to us, so we're going to put him back on hold. I should have screened the call first, but you know, if you've called us before on Discord, I don't usually screen the call because I figure your stuff's working because it worked the first time. Anyway, we'll check back with him. So here's the nature of action. Section 1, introduction. This is the DNC lawsuit filed in federal court against the Russian government, WikiLeaks, and the Donald Trump campaign, claiming collusion and conspiracy. No one is above the law. In the run-up to the 2016 election, Russia mounted a brazen attack on American democracy. Both letters capitalized on that.
That's important.
The opening salvo was a cyber attack on the DNC carried out on American soil. In 2015 and 2016, Russian intelligence services hacked into the DNC's computers, penetrated its phone systems, and exfiltrated tens of thousands of documents and emails. Russia then used this stolen information to advance its own interests, destabilizing the U.S. political environment, denigrating the Democratic presidential nominee, and supporting the campaign of Donald J. Trump, whose policies would benefit the Kremlin. Point number two. In the Trump campaign, Russia found a willing and active partner in this effort. In 2016, individuals tied to the Kremlin notified the Trump campaign that Russia intended to interfere with our democracy. Through multiple meetings, emails, and other communications, these Russian agents made clear that their government supported Trump and was prepared to use stolen emails and other information to damage his opponent and the Democratic Party.
This is some of the most sour grapes I have ever heard in a lawsuit. Now, look, I'm no expert, but man, this—I'd be embarrassed.
This doesn't even read like a legal document. This is more of like this should be somebody's Facebook post. This should not be in a complaint in federal. I mean, unless you just want to troll the federal court. In that case, like, okay, I guess. But like, no, this is.
As an attorney, by the way, somebody who went to law school, you are finding this pretty laughable.
Also, by the way, if you're you shouldn't be writing emails that will damage your campaign. You shouldn't be writing emails that are damaging to you as a person.
Number three. Right. Because if Hillary Clinton's staff and Hillary Clinton weren't cheating and intending and conspiring to cheat and doing all kinds of awful things, then releasing the emails would have been boring.
Yeah,
right? It would have just
who
been
wants to
internal
read that?
Emails.
Okay, we're having a meeting at 5. Right. Okay, do we want Subway or Domino? Like,
exactly. Or cheese pizza, I think, is the, what was it, the Pizzagate scenario thing? That was kind of going at the same time.
I don't
time.
Know. That Pizzagate thing, I ignored it because it just was so insane sounding.
Number three. Rather than report these repeated messages that Russia intended to interfere with the U.S. elections, the Trump campaign and its agents gleefully welcomed Russia's help. Indeed, the Trump campaign solicited Russia's illegal assistance and maintained secret communications with individuals tied to the Russian government, including one of the intelligence agencies responsible for attacking the DNC. Point number four. Through these communications, the Trump campaign, Trump's closest advisors, and Russian agents formed an agreement to promote Donald Trump's candidacy through illegal means. Russian agents trespassed onto DNC's computer network in the United States, as well as other email accounts, collected trade secrets and other private data, and then transmitted the data to defendant WikiLeaks, whose founder Assange shared the defendant's common goal of damaging the Democratic Party in advance of the election. Now, to be clear, Julian Assange and WikiLeaks have released documents that have been less than friendly to pretty much every political party on the planet.
Right, yes. But the left is the only one that can't, you know, take a conversation. So,
Russia, through military intelligence, they claim, GRU officers posting as Guccifer 2.0, herein referred to as GRU Operative Number 1. And
GRU Operative Number 1.
And through WikiLeaks, then disseminated the information at times when it would best suit the Trump campaign. Point number 5.
No one at WikiLeaks sat there and did that. Nobody has time for that.
As stolen DNC information was strategically released into the public sphere, then-candidate Trump openly praised the illegal disseminations and encouraged Russia to continue its violations of U.S. law through its ongoing hacking campaign against the Democratic Party.
Also not illegal. So if I get on Facebook and I'm like, okay, Trump is having a speech on this day. Hillary Clinton is having a speech on this day.
Well, they're not claiming it's illegal. They're just claiming Trump said it, so therefore he's involved. See, because Trump praised the WikiLeaks for releasing the info, therefore...
Right, but I can time, as long as I'm not accepting monetary or financial contributions of any in kind and all that, if I'm just doing this as a hobby, I can time my Facebook post to be strategic to harm either candidate. There's nothing illegal about that. I can release content on any schedule I want.
The idea that somehow you praise someone and therefore you're colluding is pretty flimsy. I mean, like, about as flimsy as it gets. I mean, I could praise Vercingetorix and the people that held out at Alesia, and I'm reasonably certain that I'm not some kind of, you know, first century BC Gaul. I mean, this makes
Edward
any sense.
Edward Snowden will be disappointed to find out that he is colluding with me.
Number two, this is section two now. So the first section was the introduction. This is section two, overview of the conspiracy. Part 6. Russia's cyber attacks on the DNC began only weeks after Trump announced his candidacy for president of the United States in June of 2015. And within months, allied European and intelligence services began reporting suspicious communications between Trump associates and Russian operatives to their U.S. counterparts. Next, 7. In late 2015, while campaigning for president, Trump himself signed a letter of intent to develop and license his name to a new real estate development in Moscow, potentially fulfilling a decades-long dream. This project was to be financed through a Russian bank under sanction by the United States. The deal was brokered by Felix Sater, a Russian emigre, convicted felon, and longtime business partner of Trump.
Oh, he's got to throw that convicted felon in.
In explaining the deal to Michael Cohen, Trump's personal attorney, Sater suggested he would get Russian President Vladimir Putin to support the project in an effort to boost Trump's electoral hopes. Quote, I will get Putin on this program, and we will get Donald elected. I know how to play it, and we will get this done. Buddy, our boy can become president of the USA, and we can engineer it. I will get all of Putin's team to buy in on this. I will. Unquote. Well, is that damning right there? I mean, you got a broker, real estate broker who says he's got connections with Putin. He's going to make the deal happen. Does that mean that, you know, there was actually some kind of collusion?
Good luck to them to prove it. Yeah, good luck.
Next point. By early 2016, Trump was well on his way to becoming the favorite to win the GOP nomination. As he moved closer to securing it, the ties between his campaign and Russia's government grew substantially. And we'll give you a little bit more here from the lawsuit against the DNC, by the DNC against the Trump administration, against the Trump campaign, against WikiLeaks, against Julian Assange, against the Russian government as well. 855-450-FREE allows you to take control of the airwaves here on Free. It's Free Talk Live. You can bring up whatever you want here. The DNC filing a lawsuit against the country of Russia, against the government of Russia, against WikiLeaks, and they actually served them over Twitter. They served WikiLeaks over Twitter under a judge's okay, which was shocking. We're reading some of the allegations from the very beginning, kind of the summary of what they claim is a conspiracy between Russia, WikiLeaks, and the Donald Trump campaign. We'll share a little bit more of that with you coming up here, but I also want to make sure you know about the Tom Woods podcast. A lot of libertarians got to know Tom Woods during the Ron Paul campaigns in 2008 and 2012. Tom is a New York Times best-selling author who's written over a dozen books, including The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. And since September of 2013, Tom Woods has been putting out his own Tom Woods show every single weekday, which means he's racked up about 1,200 episodes so far. Some great guests like Ron Paul, Judge Andrew Napolitano, David Stockman, and many more. Topics including war, the Federal Reserve, net neutrality, the FDA, Austrian economics, and other subjects of interest to libertarians. You can find the Tom Woods Show online at tomwoods.com or search Tom Woods Show in your favorite podcatcher. Let's go back to the phones here. We did check with him there, and he fixed whatever the issue was with his computer. Mortified Penguin is on the line via Discord's rooms. Go ahead, Penguin. You're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, yeah. Sorry about that. I've been doing a lot of weird things with my phone settings, and I guess I disabled the mic temporarily.
Right. Here you are.
I'm here now. First of all, before I start, I just want to wish one of our favorite callers a happy birthday. James from Arizona. I think it's his birthday today.
So, oh, really?
Happy birthday to you.
I don't see any reason why you'd want to give any extra attention to somebody like that. For listeners who don't know, particular caller is very hostile and very nasty and does not deserve your attention or time. Please go ahead with the real reason you were calling.
Okay. Yes. I wanted to call about I've been meaning to want to call about libertarians and minorities. Basically, you know, libertarians definitely have, of all stripes, definitely have kind of an issue with outreach. And it's not necessarily the fault of anybody, but it seems to be that the message of liberty tends to reach mostly, or at least attract mostly, people of the same demographic.
Yeah,
and,
white males.
Okay, it does. And
Matthew, yes. Man, called in last week maybe, and to address the same issue, and he seems befuddled as to why these the libertarians can't reach into the black community. And what do you think?
I don't think it's all libertarian. I mean, it's a lot of issues. It's a lot of different issues from all different directions. And but I do think that, you know, it kind of, you know, the liberty issues kind of fall into this. I think you might have said this, this very analytical kind of view. And it's somewhat theoretical. It's definitely analytical. It doesn't necessarily hit. It does hit the practical for a lot of people.
Okay, so are you accusing minorities of not being intelligent? Because that's kind of what it sounds like right now.
No. But it's just very, it's very logic-driven, kind of theoretical, not, you know, how does this affect your day-to-day life? Because people are looking to politics to see how does this affect my day-to-day life on the street level.
Well, and I wouldn't classify anarchy or libertarianism or however you want to put it as a political position. It's really a philosophy and a moral structure to me.
Right, and people of different skin colors aren't more or less moral, so again, why would that not appeal to other people of different skin colors?
I actually think that that's definitely not how the vast majority of non-libertarian, non-anarchists see it. And I think that's a very important thing to kind of point out, is that it's not always... It can be presented in that respect, but it's not always presented in that respect.
Okay, but I'm not selling a political philosophy. I'm selling a philosophical and more moral structure. So if you're looking to buy a political philosophy, go see somebody who's selling a political philosophy.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But that's how people see it. And I guess I think that it's not necessarily decided upon. There's a libertarian party, and people don't really understand the distinction between the Libertarian Party and different ideas of liberty. And I think if it was presented more as a moral philosophy, or overarching moral philosophy, there'd be much better inroads.
So what you're saying is the Libertarian Party is a failure because they're not presenting the morality of liberty anymore, and instead they're watering down candidates like Gary Johnson. They're using watered down candidates like Gary Johnson and Bill Weld, who were there 2016. Johnson was also in 2012, presidential and vice presidential candidates who came to the table with just basically a kind of smaller government platform, but not really any kind of principles or morality behind it.
And don't forget that Hillary's great.
Yeah, well, that's what Bill Weld said publicly. But so what you're saying is that's not attractive?
Well, I think it is attractive to some people, but like it's not the paradigm shift. Like, I'm just kind of realizing this as I call it. You're right. It's a moral philosophy, and that means it's not the paradigm shift from, you know, I may have thought so at the time when I first heard about Gary Johnson's campaign and LP way back when, but it's not the actual paradigm shift from politics that I think people probably...
Okay.
Really,
so, I mean, I'm going to agree with you that...
Because a third party is a third party.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you that the Libertarian Party is a failure at communicating the ideas of liberty, and they have been for the last decade.
I wouldn't even qualify the LP as libertarians.
These days, they certainly aren't advocating pure principle, non-aggression principle. You know, they're not advocating the very principle that supposedly was the founding document of the party. So they're a huge failure. But let's go back to 2008 or before 2008. So again, they've been failing miserably for more than about a decade at least. And they were on the decline prior to 2008, let's say from 2004 to 2008. So let's go back before 2004, back when the Libertarian Party was a much more principled organization, was much more likely to talk about the non-aggression principle and the morality of why government is evil and, you know, why government force has unintended consequences. Back then, I think you would have found that it was a fairly white male strong organization. Why wouldn't the moral message have attracted minority groups at that time?
Well, I do think that outreach is a viable thing, because if people just haven't heard the message and don't hear it,
if, so you're if saying they were too small, they were too insignificant. They
is
just
it possible
the
that
out.
Because they're white males, that in and of itself sends off some kind of social warning sign that says "Don't come
don't
here"?
Listen to me.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just asking a question.
I think in this day and age, unfortunately, if the entire room is just full of of white males, it could possibly do that.
I know that the feminists have come up with this term called a mantle, right? That if your convention has a panel that has nothing but men on it, it's called a mantle, right? And the idea is that you and then there's a problem when you have one woman on the panel.
Well, right, because that's the other aspect of this. We were just talking about so-called minorities, but there's also a dearth of women in the liberty movement as well. I mean, a significant difference between males and
especially females. In the Libertarian Party, I'd say less so the Liberty Movement.
Barely less so. I mean, it really, you're seeing more women come up to, let's say, New Hampshire, but almost always they're accompanied by men. More coming up here in moments. Yeah. If you want, Mortified, hang on, because, you know, are you black?
I'm not, no.
Okay.
I'm minority, not black.
Minority, not black. Okay. We'll talk a little bit more, because I want to know, what has your success been when you talk to other minority folks? Are you a cryptocurrency advocate? The Crypto Tip is the ideal outreach tool to help new people discover cryptocurrency. It's a printable business card size tip that you can give to service providers, preferably in addition to a good cash tip. When the server scans the QR code, it'll bring up an explanation of cryptocurrency, how to install a wallet, and allow them to claim the tip. If they don't claim the crypto, you get your tip refunded to you after a time period you specify. Plus, if they do claim the tip, you get an email alert. Create as many tips as you want at CryptoTip.org. That's CryptoTip.org. It's Free Talk Live. Dial toll free if you want. The number here, 855-450-FREE. Like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. You can bring up anything here. We also have the Discord on-air call-in lines, which are available to you. Go to discord.lrn.fm, and you can join the Discord server, which allows you to actually interact with other Free Talk Live listeners. So unlike Skype, where nobody on Skype knew each other, on Discord, when you're not on the air with us, you can actually talk to other listeners in our chat room. There's actually multiple chat rooms of different topics. And, of course, the one that's busiest during our show is the one called Free Talk Live. So feel free to get interactive. Even if you're not going to ever call the show, you can still join the Discord server and chat with other listeners. And some of the hosts of the show are also in there pretty regularly. I think Melanie is in there with me tonight. Go to discord.lrn.fm to jump in there. As we go back to Mortified Penguin, he's on the line with us in Virginia. Now, Penguin, you had said that you are of a minority group, but you're not black, so how would you self-describe?
Well, actually, I would say honestly that my dad is immigrant from Pakistan. And
Pakistan.
My mom's American. Yeah, so, but I'm white enough that I wouldn't really give...
You're not getting a whole lot of DWBs, basically.
Driving while
black. I wouldn't give any credit to, oh, here's a minority libertarian, because I don't know if that's a success in regards of expanding the message of liberty.
So,
but I will say this: I interact with a lot of minorities, a lot of people, a lot of African American people,
okay.
A lot of people in general. So I do have an insight on it.
Yeah, because for listeners that aren't that are just tuning in, you had called about libertarians seeming inability to penetrate into minority culture or groups with their message and recruit. So if you show up, for instance, at a libertarian convention, there's going to be hardly any minorities there, and hardly any women as well. The most recent libertarian Party of New Hampshire event. Now, obviously, New Hampshire is highly white considering the population breakdown, but still, just looking at women versus men, my prediction is always that the women will not break much more than 10% of the room. And that was true at this convention, which was a well-attended business convention. There were, three or four dozen people there. Of the women who were there, there were about three women there and like maybe about 36 or so people totally attending. Three women were there. But all three of them were accompanied by a male counterpart. So not to say that, I'm not saying Jaletta Jarvis, who's running for governor, wouldn't have gone had her husband not been there. I think she would have. But it was just, worth noting. It was worth noting. And the same thing's also true of women who show up in New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project. Almost always, they come along with a boyfriend or a husband.
It's funny that you're sitting here in the studio with a woman who came for the Free State Project.
Okay, but that doesn't change stats.
It doesn't.
I don't think Melanie would disagree with me on
this. No, I don't disagree with you either.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's funny.
No, I was joking to somebody in the car a couple days ago that we're going to have all girls to fix the demographic problem. as a joke, obviously, because you don't get to pick. But yeah, I mean that.
I wish there would be an influx of libertarian women here, but it's
wouldn't
just
it be
not
nice
happening.
If you were interested in something that women were interested in? But no, not at all. Like nothing that you're interested in.
The time where Melanie lived in Keene, she doesn't live in Keene right now. She lives in Manchester, where there are actually some other libertarian women. I think you were the only libertarian female in this area.
That may very well have been true.
Yeah, I think that was the case.
Let's start by not calling women females, and maybe that'll help attract a few.
Is that offensive?
It depends on the context. Yeah. If you can't tell the difference, then it might be. If you're going out of your way to not offend people, you might want to strike that word.
So, female's offensive. I didn't know that.
Well,
people sometimes use it derogatorily. I don't think that it is always a derogatory word, but
okay. Is male offensive?
No. It's just when dealing with minorities and people who have been disadvantaged in the past, one generally
which is not women. Just to be clear, is not women.
Well, there was a time when women couldn't vote, and many of them take
we're
that
talking
very
about libertarian
yeah, that doesn't
women
really affect
today.
Your life if you can't vote.
If those. You're a libertarian woman, you got your choice of the libertarian men in New Hampshire.
I was specifically referring to the past.
Yeah, well, we're talking about the present.
Demographics, yeah. Not libertarians. I'm talking about women.
Okay.
And women had it a little rougher than men generally. So when you start.
No, they didn't.
Well, they couldn't vote. They couldn't own property.
Who cares if they can't vote?
They could own property for a very long time. And voting is not like a right. It's not a right at all, but it's not a right that you need like in your day-to-day life.
You're the
it's
one
not
who
like,
says
oh, I
voting's
can't get groceries
insignificant.
Because I can't vote.
You're the one who gets on the air every time voting comes up and talks about how insignificant a vote is. I mean, you know, women have been able to do a lot that men cannot
sure,
do.
Sure, I can make a great argument as
like,
to
tell you not to use words.
Why women's suffrage is relatively irrelevant from a voting standpoint. I can make that argument. That doesn't change the fact that some women take that part very seriously.
I gotcha. No, I'm not saying that they shouldn't be able to vote. I'm just saying that's like, okay, well, there were some other things they could do that men couldn't do.
I don't know. They
time.
Tend to vote Democratic heavily, so maybe it would help if they couldn't.
All right, Mortified Penguin. So other observations from your attempts to communicate with folks in minority groups?
I basically say, look, well, I think women is a whole nother issue. Mm-hmm. You know, it's such a hugely different issue. But as far as minority, at least as minority males, and of course women too, I mean, if they're interested. But I think there needs to be a spark for liberty. There has to be one issue that gets you listening, gets you interested. So there could be an issue with police, and then you say, well, this is not maybe something you've heard before, but this is the liberty position, issues, criticism of the government, anti-war and stuff that may surprise people that, you know, that libertarians or so-called right libertarians, their view of war and imperialism of race. And of course that's a complicated issue because there's legislation involved there. But there has
and
to be
lots of different races, too. Will Coley, for instance, is attempting to bring the ideas of liberty to Muslims, and they recently relatively pretty much switched parties. Basically, before 9/11, Muslims voted Republican. Post 9/11, Muslims vote Democrat.
Yeah, it's amazing how much raping someone at the airport will get them to vote against you.
Yeah, there's no doubt, but this is ample opportunity. It's not like Democrats rushed to Muslims' aid, post 9/11 or anything. So, there was a great opportunity for libertarians, and still, it's just that whole, well, I don't want to vote for this tiny little party. It's not like my vote will be even count for anything. It's just
well, true,
rough.
Wasted vote syndrome is
when it
a
comes
huge problem.
To, yeah, when you look at Hispanics, largely they are very socially conservative and should be aligned with Republicans, but Republican stance on immigration tends to drive them towards the Democratic Party. Since the Southern strategy, blacks are it is essentially they're a cultural monolith for the Democratic Party. It's just it's tough to break this.
We have one group of people just kind of saying we're excluding you. I mean, pretty openly at this point, and another group of people just saying that that we welcome you, we tolerate you, and people just flock to that because people are easily feel the sense of alienation and want to belong. And I do like the idea that this is not really a third party or a third way, political way. This is a moral
philosophy.
But so, I mean, my experience at being many, at many liberty events is that the gratitude that people show at these liberty events for people of color of all different sorts being at these events is it's almost uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It is uncomfortable. It's an uncomfortable level of sort of clawing gratitude. Oh, it's so good to see you. Nice. What's your name? You know, that kind of thing. You know, you're not going to get that as a white guy walking in. But, you know, the black guy certainly is. I mean, if you want to
and we'll put him on the radio.
If a black guy wants to be welcomed.
There's a black guy here.
If a black guy wants to be welcomed, he should go to a liberty event because he will be welcomed with open arms. So it's not just the welcome status. It's something more that I don't really understand entirely.
Mortified Penguin, thank you for the call tonight. I do appreciate it. It is a topic that has been brought up over the years many times. And it's tough. It's you know, more outreach needs to be done. And, of course, when you start with a bunch of people who aren't necessarily active in a certain community, how do you make the inroads in the first place to get into those communities? So it's, you know, chicken or the egg to some extent, but you're welcome to weigh in with your thoughts here. 855-450-FREE, like freedom, you can join us here on Free Talk Live, because liberty is for everybody. It's Free Talk Live. You can bring up anything you want here. In the remaining moments, which are happening now, our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. Discord on-air call-in lines are available to you as well. Jump on our Discord server over at discord.lrn.fm. Did you miss seeing Ron Paul speak at this year's Anarchapulco? Well, the good news is you don't have to miss him in 2019, because he is already on the schedule. He's coming back to Acapulco, Mexico. He'll be there somewhere in the range, the date range of February 14th through the 19th. It is going to be five beautiful days in a beautiful location at an amazing world-class resort right on the beach in Acapulco. It's just a tremendous location, and we had a great time there. Mark, you and I were there broadcasting this year. We're going back next year for Anarchapulco 2019, and you, as a Free Talk Live listener, you get a discount if you use code FTL at anarchapulco.com to get your tickets. You'll receive 15% off, and I don't believe we've ever offered a discount for Anarchapulco before, so this is the first time that you can go and actually, you know, give us some credit for bringing you to the event over at anarchapulco.com.
Yeah, I sincerely hope a bunch of listeners come. I would love to, you know, it's a great event, and it'd be nice to have a bunch of listeners come.
There were some that were there this year, definitely. They came up, they introduced themselves, and it was cool. And of course, there's going to be some great speakers there. Judge Napolitano, Ron Paul, Doug Casey, Larkin Rose, and others. I heard David Icke is going to be there. So we're going to have to talk to that guy on Free Talk Live.
Yeah.
It's a big name.
Yeah, when you think of David Icke, it's difficult not to think reptilians.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of what he made, whether he intended to or not, made a name for himself. But he's actually got some interesting metaphysical positions that he takes that I happen to agree with.
I'm happy to have the discussion about that, but we're talking about reptilians.
All right. Anarchapulco.com, code FTL, gets you the 15% off. Again, mark your calendar, February 14th through the 19th in Acapulco for 2019. It's going to be great. We'll look forward to seeing you there. Let's go to Otis. He's in Orange County watching us on our Twitch feed at twitch.lrn.fm. Hey, Otis.
Hey, what's going on today, gentlemen?
We're doing a radio show, as always. What's on your mind?
Well, I got like 25 minutes. That was actually, you guys must like him a lot better than me, because and I usually get 5 minutes. I mean, maybe my topics aren't as cool, but whatever.
Well,
but,
I mean, you're funny, but the funny can only go long.
That's what we do. Well, you know what we do.
I mean, it's fun to pick on Mark. Questions. You know, I don't blame you for it, but
That's the other guy that picks on Mark. That's not me. I like Mark.
Oh, okay.
I was going to ask what kind of shampoo he's using these days, because his hair looks really good tonight.
You still using that Unicure,
but,
Mark?
I use your head and the store brand version of Head and Shoulders that comes from Walmart.
Okay.
And then
I've got the same thing.
Mark, we can see you adjusting your pecker on the screen, man. Come on.
My what?
We can see you.
Also
is that against Twitch rules, by the way?
Unicure
adjustment.
And
Mark, I'm pretty sure you're breaking the rules out here.
No, I don't think so.
No? Is it? I don't know. Okay. Twitch does have a bunch of really silly rules that are fairly easy to violate.
Yeah, you might catch it for that. I don't know.
I don't know. We'll see. We're still all right.
Like
we're too small time. Twitch doesn't care about us.
My grandmother gave me a call the other day because remember she had her password put on here?
Her what?
And somebody from Peru was trying to get into her Facebook and she thought it was me. I'm like, hello, I'm not in Peru. Hello, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, so, see, you're running out of steam, Otis. You're running out of steam.
What's that?
I said you're running out of steam.
What's up? What are you talking about?
Thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. Let's continue here. Toll-free number 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. She's Sarah in New Mexico. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Sarah.
Yes. Did you know that they had a hit-and-run driver, and he killed a bicyclist, and they finally caught him after 5 days? They caught him today because of Crime Stoppers.
Because somebody reported him?
Well, but I have used Crime Stoppers before, too.
I bet you have.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
On what sort of crimes have you used Crime Stoppers?
I'm not going to say.
I want to know.
I'm not going to say because I don't.
Are you embarrassed?
I'm not going to say, but you know what?
Are you embarrassed about who you snitched on?
No, I might get beat up.
Did your crime actually have? Did your all right? Tell us this: did the crime that you reported, or the alleged crime that you reported, actually have a victim?
Pretty much. Also known as no.
So are you talking about like reporting a teenager for smoking cigarettes or something like that? What are you saying?
Well, you know what? It's something to do with electric wires here. You know, they were ripping off electric wires.
Okay, so stealing. So somebody was stealing. They were like stealing copper wire out of a house or something.
No, they're taking
out of the
power.
Everywhere. They do this all over Albuquerque, and people just get power outages, and the hospitals, the life supports get messed up and things like that. It's pretty serious.
You're saying they're stealing power?
Well, they mess with the they try to steal copper, and it stops electricity. It just caused havoc for the whole.
Okay, so they're stealing wires out of buildings and poles and stuff like that.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay,
that's an actual crime. That's an actual crime. All right, go ahead. What were you calling about Crime Stoppers?
Well, the whole point of it is that it's anonymous service. That's the whole point why they have it, so that they don't become like a. They don't ask you for your name and where you live and your phone number so that, that the person that know that you did it, you're the one that, they will come and kill you later. You know what I mean? That's the whole beauty of it. Nobody has to know who has...
Melanie, as an almost attorney, somebody who went to law school, doesn't it make it harder for the police to prove a case if they can't actually call a witness to the stand?
Yes, but that doesn't mean it's not useful, and they might not need you as a witness. They might just need you to find out where other evidence is.
Also,
most people call them Crime Stoppers. I wouldn't want to have to hold them as being... able to hold up against the other side's cross. I'll just say that much.
Yeah, also, most cases don't even go to trial. So, it's still evidence.
Well, the thing about it is all they have to do was witness the make of the car, the person, what they look like, and the license plate of the car, and maybe have a picture. But nobody has to know who did it. But it was enough to catch them. And I'm glad that we have Crime Stoppers. You know what I mean? So...
I also don't really believe, I'm not going to rely on a person called a phone number and gave a license plate and description, and then therefore, based on that, believe that that was the guy that did it. That's just the flimsiest evidence I can possibly think of.
No, what he did was that they found the wrecked car with a dented front and damage to big damage, and the guy was not there. He ran off. They found the truck.
Okay, so I understand that there was an accident that occurred. That does not tell me who was driving the car that was at fault.
Well, the thing is, if you match up the license plate of the car and the driver's
but
license...
But match it up to what? Match it up to an anonymous phone call. I understand, for the cops, that's good enough. For me, that is worthless.
Well, But they caught him, and when they caught him, I think they caught somebody
who happened to have a dent in their car.
If they catch a person and they blab and say I did it, well, then you don't need to make a case, right? There is no, you don't have to call anybody. And,
That's the value of this, by the way.
Right, because half the time, when the cops show up, somebody just talks themselves into an arrest.
Half the time?
Maybe more than half the time. Sarah, thank you for the call tonight, because people don't understand that they don't have to talk to the police. That you can, you know, use your right to remain silent. Now, of course, these days, as I understand it, the Supreme Court has ruled you have to actually invoke your right to remain
silent.
Which
is kind of paradoxical, but whatever.
So you're probably better off letting the police know that you won't be answering their questions, which is why my favorite response these days is whenever the cops, or in this case I used it on the Border Patrol most recently, was when they asked me the question, I said, I don't answer questions. So your answer to their question is, I don't answer questions, which informs them that you're not going to be speaking to them. And if they then follow it up with another question, you just say the same thing. I don't answer questions. Because they'll keep trying. You know, they're very persistent.
One thing is that you can invalidate, it's my understanding, you can invalidate the any line of questioning that comes afterwards if you first say, I'd like to first speak to my attorney.
Yeah, don't rely on that. Just don't talk.
I agree with you. You shouldn't. But it's probably the first thing you should say is, look, everything you say is probably a legal term, and I don't understand the legal terms, so you're really going to have to speak to my attorney.
We are out of time for tonight, but you can join us tomorrow between now and then over at freetalklive.com. And you can help amp the show, get behind this program for $5 per month at ampamp.freetalklive.com. We're going to have some changes coming up to the AMP program soon, which we're excited to talk about, but we're not quite ready to talk about it yet. So stay tuned for that in future episodes. It's been Ian, Melanie, and Mark. Don't forget to check Melanie out at her website, tax.freetalklive.com. And we will see you tomorrow. Freetalklive.com in the meantime, and the Discord at discord.lrn. LRN.fm now has a Discord. Discord is a free text and voice chat platform, and we now have our own server with a bunch of channels at discord.lrn.fm. You can join other listeners as they chat about various things during our live shows, or anytime, day or night. Discord software is available cross-platform, so you can have it on whatever device you want and take your chats anywhere. Join our Discord at discord.lrn.fm. That's discord.lrn.fm.